On Widnes Rugby Chat this week, we look ahead to the Challenge Cup derby against Warrington, debate some of the burning issues within rugby league, and we hear from Alan Coleman about the size of his squad and the first defeat of the season at Batley. Alan, can you throw that away really, a bit at the end there?
Yeah, not always. I've just said to the lads in there then, a bit disappointed really, just... We couldn't hold on last year. We did well in that department where we got our noses in front. But I've just said then, it's been coming for a few weeks, this. It's not just happened today. We've won two games last few weeks and we've been lucky because we've not been great. I'm not papering over cracks or hiding behind anything. We've not been good and won. So I've just said to him in there, that's not just today. That's been coming for weeks. But, you know, we desperately need some reinforcements. We need some bodies in. We need challenge for positions. I've got, like, no competition in any department. And that's not great because there's some players today, you know, if there's competition, I need a call, talk with them. But they know there's no competition. And I'm not throwing my players under a buzz here, if anything. It'll help them play better. Because when that competition's there, you've just got that fight. And at the minute, we've got nothing. I've got 21 fit lads and two of them's not really fit.
Obviously, you've released a few players in recent weeks who have perhaps brought in younger players and experienced players. What's the reasoning behind them going then if you need that competition for players?
Just because they want to play. The young lads, they want to play rugby, part of their development. I can't give them that. I can't guarantee them that. And I'm certainly not stopping a young man from playing the sport, what we all love. So, you know, they go with my blessings. We've got to do something somewhere. Somebody's got to do something somewhere and get some bodies in.
Would you not face the same problem though if you brought other players in, if they can't get a game?
Nah, it's not a kit. I think we've got to bring, I'm not saying lone players, our own players in. We've got to strengthen. We've got the smallest squad in Championship. The smallest. So, you know, that says it all.
You seem to be sharp at the start of both halves in this game. Certainly in the first half, you really got on the front, probably at early doors. You probably thought you should have got more points on the bottom. And then the second half, playing up the hill, you got that 8-point lead. And you look good in them in the first 15, 20 minutes of both halves, but then just sort of fell away and...
Yeah, I just think we did some dumb stuff. If you look at their tries, when Reece drops ball, they score on back of that. Flem knocks on, they score on back of that. We challenge and I kick, everyone goes for the ball and nobody stays off. They roll the downfield and score from that. It's just little stuff where we've got to be smarter. You know, if you're 8 points in front at Batley, we all know what you should be doing. Playing in corners, finishing corners. Nothing, no panicking. You don't have to chase game. The message at half-time was we don't have to chase this game. Let's just stay focused, complete high. It's a tough place to come, no matter who you're playing, and you know. But we did some dumb stuff, and it's cost us.
Did you burn through your interchanges a bit early as well? I think you used your last one 15 minutes to go. They still had three left, and they seemed to be fresher in that last 10.
Yeah, message yours. My middles were tired. They couldn't carry on, and which isn't great normally. You know, in the past, I've had one or two left, but unfortunately, they blew up today, and... If somebody's telling me they can't give me anything, I've got to bring them off. I was really hesitant in doing it, but we had to because that could have cost us again, and at that point we was in front. So, yeah, disappointing. Just thought something missing. And I'm not just saying it because we've lost, because, you know, I've said it to my staff for the last few weeks. We're just not doing something. There's something not there. Even when we've won, I've said it. So, yeah, good thing is we've got a week off where we can just enjoy ourselves, really. So we've just all agreed in there. Let's just put it to bed. It's done with. And it'll happen to all other teams this year. They'll lose games where they think they'll win because it's such a good competition. So it just takes our mind off it. Hopefully we might get a couple more bodies, fingers crossed, you know, available for selection if they come through. But if not, we've got what we've got.
You feel it's a bit of a missed opportunity to go into next week? You could, you know, Bradford losing, you could have been top of the league and then welcome Warrington. Is that a bit of a missed opportunity?
That was the plan, James, to be honest. It was a case of going to that game, unbeaten, 7 from 7 in all competitions, really in a good place. Knowing we've not played great, but still unbeaten, so that's a good thing as a group. But, you know, it could be... This could probably give us a little bit more thingy for next week also on flip side of it, where we can just play with a bit of freedom and not get carried away with ourselves, if that makes sense. So we're not going into it thinking, oh, we're unbeaten with this, with that. We're not. We're Widnes. We're Championship club and they're a Super League club. So let's go and challenge in every area we can, man for man, all over the field, challenge your opposition, be better than him and see if you can compete with him.
Are you looking forward to it? Big occasion for yourself as well as a coach?
Yeah, I'd just love to see 5,000-6,000 on. It'd be brilliant, that. I think the players deserve that. And the club deserves it. And hopefully it'll put a few pennies in bank and we might be able to sign somebody else.
So Alan Coleman there, perhaps a little surprised by his comments about the squad size, given the departures, Mike. What are your thoughts on the situation?
He sounded a very frustrated person. Usually Alan, he's quite enthusiastic, isn't he? And, you know, massively positive, and he did sound a little bit down within himself there. Look, I said it a couple of weeks ago, we are thin on the ground. Literally, we're running with what we've got. You know, the recruitment without, you know, calling people, you've got to say it hasn't been good enough, because what's that? Four of them have left, four of them have left. Really, without contributing, and, you know, whether it's small amounts of money or large amounts of money, you know, it's still wasted money, and certainly wasted time when you could have maybe looked around for alternative players. But there's no doubt we need players in. We do, because I know there's this kind of age conversation of, well, if you dual reg, do you need a deep squad? Maybe not, but look, this game, you know, coming up against Warrington, if 3-4 of our players are taken out, which could quite easily happen, you know, you're in a very, very difficult position. We really are. And, it does come down to, really, you know, the recruitment side of it before a ball's been kicked. You have to say that, because the team that we're running with now, really, apart from Deck Patton, you know, Benyon and a couple of others, it's pretty much what we had last year.
Well, and then minus obviously the players that left. Mackenzie Buckley obviously went off his own accord, but then we've seen Cameron Brown, Adam Jones, and Regan Sumner leave in the past few weeks. My position on it is, I think it's very different. I think we touched upon it, didn't we, recently with the Sumner one and the Cameron Brown one, to be fair. I think it's difficult for part-time clubs to keep players happy, because if you're not playing, and that's sort of what Alan Coleman's saying, is that he liked the players. The reason he signed them was because he wanted to develop them. I guess the problem is that Widnes probably haven't got the money to develop players, if that makes sense. They almost need players who are ready to play now. You know, because you could make the argument, well, why don't you keep them and loan them out to, you know, Rochdale or somebody else? But clearly, Widnes haven't got the money to carry on doing that. And I think it probably is, like you say. I mean, I'd not really thought about it in the way that you've sort of said there about Alan Coleman sounding a bit downbeat about it. I'd not really thought about it in that way. Because I suppose that is a coach you would like to plan for the future. But maybe it's a very rugby league thing at the moment, that you've just got to look after what you're doing in here and now. That's probably where rugby league finds itself at the moment. On the flip side, Halifax have only got a squad of 20, and they've won 3 out of 3 in the league. So they're using St. Helens for dual reg. I think it's difficult, because I understand that people want to see the bigger squad, but you can't, players aren't going to want to sit on the sideline and not play. And likewise, the club can't afford to have players, you know, and the club aren't paying players enough to sit and not play, if that makes sense. So if you're not playing, it's not as if, you know, if you're on a good contract, you might think, oh, I'll sit on my contract, but they're not going to do that.
I think where my head goes with it, James, is like them, say, 4 players, for example, you know, potentially you could have got 1.5, 2 first teamers out of that, you know, with the money that was probably spent across the 4 of them, which, you know, yeah, with hindsight would have been a bit more wiser. But the other one that was a bit of a head scratcher for me as well, like thinking back, was obviously we originally signed Regan Sumner, obviously, and then we go and recruit Rhys Williams to make it 4 wingers again. And it's like, you know, when you're talking about the balance of a small squad, and I'm thinking, well, when we signed Regan Sumner, you know, Rhys Williams was a free agent also. Would it have just made sense to get Rhys Williams and not Sumner? Or was that deal done way back when when Regan was on loan, perhaps, who knows?
I think and I don't know this for sure, but Sumner got, I think he was in an accident in the pre-season and was sidelined, which is why he didn't play in the Warrington game. So I wonder whether it's just a little bit of a sliding door sort of moment where if maybe he hadn't have been struck down because of that, maybe Widnes wouldn't have signed Reece Williams. Maybe something happened where the club had a bit of extra money and they could afford Reece Williams. Maybe they'd made Reece Williams an offer and he didn't want it at first. I mean, I get the point people are saying, well, why pay for these three or four players over pre-season? I suppose you could argue that, you know, having 26 helps in pre-season because you can have contested training sessions and things like that. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly not a great position to be in. But I just think it's probably a consequence of the way rugby league is at the moment. I think realistically, I think the best you can probably hope for is 20, 21, 22 players and then rely on dual reds because we've seen the part of the issue that Widnes have had with the dual red situation is that the Super League clubs want to dual reds because they want the players to play. Now, if Widnes are turning around and saying, well, we've got 17 of our own players, we don't want to play any of yours, Warrington are going to be like, well, what's the point in us dual regging with you? And it's finding that balance between those two things that I think Widnes have struggled with over the past few years. And that's why they find themselves in the position that they're in. You know, we touched upon the centre situation. You know, Zach Bardsley wrote, a Warrington player who Widnes had last season, he's out on loan at London Broncos for the season. And you're a bit like, well, was that not an area that should have been prioritised? But yeah, it's a peculiar one. Whether it's a financial one as well is probably up for speculation. There was a little bit of an unsavoury comment on the Widnes Facebook page alleging that they'd not paid the coach bill early this week, and you can have a degree of sympathy with Widnes for that situation. You might have seen on Twitter I was saying Widnes have only had one home game so far, and actually in the first 10 weeks of the season they'll only have two home games, the Sheffield game and then of course this Warrington Cup match, which must be very difficult when you think if the players have come back in November, they've had to be paid November, December, January, February, March, 5 months off basically two home games. And obviously you'd like to think they'll make a decent bit of money off the Warrington game, but by the sounds of what the council are charging, maybe they won't. But yeah, just it probably could have been a lot more positive coming into this weekend. Widnes could have been top of the league. They could have beat Batley. Last week there could have been not this sort of uncertainty going on about players and the squad. Before we start looking at the Warrington game, just let's have a little bit of a short discussion about the Batley game, because Widnes, for large parts of it, looked like they were going to win that one.
Do you know what, James? We did, but at the same time, I think after about 20 minutes for me, I thought we started off really well with a purpose. You know, I thought, you know, Martin Riley, you know, Dan Murray, Fozzard pulling the strings at hooker. Thought we were travelling down the hill really well, getting into good ball areas. A lovely try, I think, for anybody who was watching a bit more, you know, closer and what was going off the ball, the try in the right-hand corner. You know, that's what Jack Owens brings you. The communication out the back meant Fozzard made the shift to the short side without really turning his head, and the ball goes through hands, you know, without anybody like kind of stopping, and it was so fluent, and that's the beauty of having Jack out the back, and it was all going so well. And for me, the interchanges come and we just never looked the same side. And even though we somehow found our way into, you know, was it an 8-point lead with 10-12 minutes to go, I didn't think we was great. We was just doing enough. And for me, there was a play in the left corner where, I don't know, it probably wasn't arrogance, but I was fuming at the time, where it's like 10, 12 minutes to go. You're 8 points ahead. You're playing upfield. You haven't played particularly well. And it was like a miracle play and like a flick pass out the back. And it's like, where's your game management? And I know it was Jack Owens who flicked the ball and it went into touch. And, you know, he was the person who came up with the play. But both halfbacks didn't contribute into trying to see that game out. And it was like, I don't know, it was like a bit insulting almost, where it's like, do they think they've won the game already? And then, you know, before you know it, you're on a hide into 16 points in 10 minutes, you know, down the hill, which, you know, let's have it right. You know, you don't have to be a rugby player to know what happens at Batley if you give them a yard down the hill. They're one of the most enthusiastic sides in the whole division, and they just don't stop. And, you know, there was a lot in Alan's interview. I was waiting for his interview, and I'm so glad he was that honest in his interview, you know, because I think he needed to, because it was sloppy. And, you know, I think we did get what we deserved, to be fair. I've got to be honest.
I actually thought at 2012, Widnes looked like they were going to score again and win it. Because I was worried. I'd back Batley on the handicap. They'd got 12 on the handicap, and I'd back Batley, and I was getting worried at 2012. And I know Widnes hadn't played great, but I've seen a few comments about the Owens pass, but I didn't mind that so much, because I'm like, well, realistically, even if you got to the next tackle, the last tackle, you're probably not going to kick at Batley, because you don't want to give away seven tackle set. So you're only going to run the ball in. So they only really got the ball on the 10 metres anyway. So I wasn't too... The Owens one didn't really bother me a massive amount. It was actually not the best pass which is why he ended up having to pass it that way. I think the two incidents that I thought were perhaps a bit more contributing than that was the one where Widnes had put Batley under real good pressure and Ben White did a real rush kick and Matt Fleming just dropped it stone cold.
Yeah, that's
in the middle of the field with no one near him. And then it was almost too easy for him to catch. And then the other one was towards the end of the game where they'd kicked to the corner and they allowed the winger to basically spin out the tackle and go 30, 40 metres down the field. I thought they were probably the two incidents that probably killed Widnes a little bit. But, you know, they're not the only team to lose at Batley. Well, they won't be the only team to lose at Batley. It's just, I think it would have been a massive boost if Widnes could have been, you know, you could have built, if Widnes had won, they might not have been top, they would have been joint top at least. It would have been a real good sort of angle to build up to the cup match against Warrington.
Yeah, no, it would, and that was the shame about it, really. I mean, like, for the momentum of the players as well, more than anything, you know, going into that game unbeaten, it probably make them feel a foot taller a little bit as well, and, you know, that psychological part of it. I mean, the Owens incident, that was just kind of just one example to throw there. I just thought the halfbacks could have managed the game a lot better, and Owens as well being your captain, and, you know, that play more than anything. I know what you're saying about, you know, giving the ball up, but if you're giving the ball over and handing the ball over, at least you've got time to set your line and trap them, where it kind of opened the game up, so to speak, to a level that we didn't really want to, being in that position. But absolutely, I think ultimately that the one thing that's been missing, you know, on the build-up to this Warrington game coming up would have been, you know, coming off the back of another victory, being free from three and going into it. You know, we've still got nothing to lose, and there is still a buzz, and tickets are going well as well. And, you know, looking at the squad, Joe Edge might be back, which is, you know, a massive boost if he is. You know, there's plenty of positives. You know, it's one loss at the end of the day. And although what I've just said, you know, I thought we was a bit loose and not ourselves, at the same time, you know, it's one defeat, isn't it? And it means nothing in the course of a season. You know, you've got to leave it where it was and dust yourselves down and move on from it, haven't you? And kind of, what better way to do it than having a free hit at Warrington?
Yeah, I mean, John Kerr told me that the Hills were 14 points, and that's exactly what it would have took for Widnes to get anything out of the game on Sunday. So let's look ahead to this Widnes Warrington game. First meeting in nearly 7 years, the first competitive meeting. It's actually the third time in the summer era that the two sides have gone 7 years between competitive meetings. Obviously, the two times witness were outside of Super League previously. Mike, now turning into a minor local celebrity, has been... he was handpicked to do a little preview, weren't you? Some promo with the... I've seen your mug on a video somewhere with the...
Yeah, in leggies of all places, would you believe, James?
Yeah, well, I mean... I hope your agent's got a good commission for that one. But I think it's an interesting game. I am mildly amused by the comments of some Warrington fans who are seemingly in fear that they will lose to Widnes, and that's with all due respect to Widnes. I don't think it's a Widnes thing, but I just think the gulf between full time and part time is so vast that I just don't think there's a chance almost whatsoever of Widnes winning. And actually, if Widnes were to win, it would probably be the biggest Challenge Cup upset of all time. But what do you think we can expect from the game?
I think you can expect the cracking atmosphere, first and foremost. I think it's fair to say, you know, I can't speak for, you know, all Warrington fans, but I think a lot of Warrington fans, from what I see and know, actually really like and enjoy the rivalry with Widnes. And I think if they had their way, they would have us back in Super League. They do really enjoy them games. And I think you've seen that through the, you know, the ticket sales as well. But yeah, in terms of the game itself, I think, again, it's probably an example of the lack of exposure, even to people in our game, you know, that love the Super League, the lack of exposure for the Championship, because I do think there is a genuine lack of understanding of the sheer difference between part-time and full-time rugby. And as the years go by, it gets bigger, you know, certainly, you know, the sides who are the heavyweights at the top of Super League. And, you know, it does get lost that, I think there's a lot of Warrington fans that don't even realise, you know, a lot of our lads, you know, they've got full-time jobs. I think a lot of that gets lost. But I think from a Widnes perspective, you know, you've got to turn up and go on the field, give it your all when you're coming off the field, not regret anything. And I think probably what we'll see is, as the game goes on, the game will probably get a little bit too quick for us. And that's when, obviously, Warrington will probably, you know, take hold of it. It's just a case of how long that takes.
Yeah, I think, like you say, I think Widnes, they've just got to try and make a game of it for as long as possible. If they can get to half time and still be within touching distance, I think that would be a big achievement. And, you know, like you say, with the crowd want to see a competitive game. They don't want to see a blowout. And hopefully it won't be like that. Warrington are without Matty Ashton, Matt Dufty, Lachlan Fitzgibbon, Toby King, Luke Yates, Aaron Lindop are all missing through injury, but they've otherwise named everyone. They've not got Mark Sneed this week. They've just signed him from Salford, but he's not he's not registered in time, obviously. Max Wood, who's been playing for Widnes in recent weeks, probably likely to see him play. Roderick Ty, the mysterious Roderick Ty, he's in the squad as well. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. It's in the Widnes squad, by the way, is pretty much every player Widnes have got, that other than Jordan Johnston and Lewis Hawley with the long-term injuries, and Liam Kirk, who has not played since suffering a concussion a few weeks ago. He's had quite a few of them, so I would imagine that they're erring on the side of caution with that one, or, you know, there might well be other stuff going on with that. Interesting you said about, Mike, about Warrington fans wanting Widnes back in Super League for the derby. I did an article, you might have seen it, where I just looked back at some of the games Widnes have played against Warrington during the summer area. And although, because Widnes haven't been in Super League that much in, you know, what, how many seasons is it? Was it 6, 10 in total, 11 in total, something like that?
Yeah.
there's still been some quite big occasions between the two sides. Witness were the first away team to win at the Halliwell Jones. Of course, Warrington relegated. Well, Warrington confirmed Widnes' relegation in 2005, albeit that game, it wasn't because of that game. They were very much well relegated. But in the last year, there were some real memorable games. Like, I remember that, I think it was a Good Friday one at Widnes, the first one. The first ever playoff game that Widnes played, which I actually missed because I'd booked a holiday at the end of the season. My lack of ambition, didn't think we'd make the playoffs, and I missed it. I had to watch it in Spain.
Was that the one where they grabbed it right on the hooter, was it?
No, that was a league match. The playoff one was where Widnes were winning 18-0 and then 19-6 at half-time. And I remember I was watching it in Spain, and even though Widnes were winning 19-6 at half-time, I was just like, I was almost depressed because I knew what was going to happen.
Yeah,
and they conceded 16 points unanswered in the second half. I'm sure I remember there was an error off the back of a scrum, and it gave Warrington a leg up back into the, you know, it gave them field position for the try at the end of the first half. And I still think if Widnes could have gone in 18-0 at half time, maybe they would have done it. Some of the ones, the 16-6 game, Widnes won with 12 men away at Warrington, where Jack Owen scored two tries, including. And actually, one of my favourite tries where Rhys Hanbury broke and Joe Mellor kicked it on for him. Yeah. So there's been, you know, even though there's not been as many meetings as we would like, there has been, or certainly for me personally, some games that I really do remember. That Good Friday one I mentioned, I can still see Christine breaking through. You know, I was sat in the north and I can still see him making the break and going through and setting up tries. So,
And I think as well, James, like to our credit, even in the Super League era as well, you know, we always had to rise to the occasion for them games because we was most of the time heavy underdogs. And in a lot of them games, you know, some of them did, you know, quite a lot of them did go down to the wire. So it just proves, you know, what rivalry and, you know, local derbies can do, you know, to the underdogs. It does lift you a gear or two. And now, I think the 16-6 one victory, I think Hep Cale got sent off, didn't he? And we was depleted, no John Clark, a lot of players missing. That was kind of the, you know, perfect example, really, of what can happen when you have to, you know, raise your game.
And the big one was that, the sellout at Halliwell Jones when Widnes were top of the league, and it was basically first versus second. And unfortunately, Widnes lost Kevin Brown through injury the week before the game. And I think it was 10-10 at half time, but Widnes ended up getting beat fairly comfortably in the end, and actually went on to lose 8 straight league games after that, which soon burst the bubble of being on top of the league. What's your inkling for the game, Mike? What do you have anything in mind as to how you think it's going to go? I mean, I must admit, I'm finding it hard to assess, really, because I don't think Warrington are in any great shape at the moment.
No.
They're missing, obviously, probably 5, maybe, of their first-choice 13.
Can I make a case for us to win the game? Absolutely not. I can't. Like, I don't want to offend anybody saying that, but ultimately, I think you hit the nail on the head. If we're to come away with a win, I think it goes down in history of all results in the Challenge Cup. I really do, given where Super League is and, you know, the expenditure, X, Y, and Z, all that factored in. I think what I would like to think over the last 2 years of, you know, watching rugby under Alan and the coaching staff and the players we've got, and, you know, seeing the squad tonight that we've announced, hoping, you know, Edgy can get back in there and we can, you know, name as good as, you know, the strongest team within them 21 players we possibly can. I'd like to think after half an hour it'll be competitive, but I just, where my concern is, where the game runs away with us is once we make them first set of interchanges and Warrington's interchanges are coming on, I just see the game getting far too fast for us. And I know we've got home advantage, but I think it's probably going to be at our detriment because it's a quick pitch, and I think that'll suit Warrington. Like you said before, James, I just hope I just hope we can keep it respectable. I do think
Johnston, you know, it goes without saying your player of the year is a big miss, but I think the other main reason that Johnston's a miss is I think Widnes would be better carrying four forwards on the bench, but the concern is that they don't want to play Fozard for 80 minutes because clearly he's more effective when he can play 60 minutes. But I thought maybe at Batley on Sunday, losing the two interchanges to spell your hooker probably was maybe the difference between keeping the forwards that they've got fresh. I don't know whether there's a way around it particularly. Of course, you're losing Max Wood this week, but then at the same time, if Joe Edge is back, then Max Roberts then perhaps reverts to playing in the forwards, which then gives you a little bit more more energy. And
it's frustrating as well, because if the player we kind of signed in case this scenario happened was probably Lewis Hall as well, and we've lost him, you know.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I actually said to Matt Turner, actually Warren Garden this week, I said, I think having Liam Kirk back would have, I think if he's in the Widnes squad, I think the game becomes a lot closer. Just because I think his size and what he does, I think you could maybe even start him and bring Martin Riley off the bench or whatever. I just think he's perhaps the swinging point at the moment for the Widnes pack. I think if he's in the team, and I'm not saying he's the best forward Widnes have got, he's not, but I just think his presence just makes the depth of the pack a bit yeah. better. It gives it a bit more flexibility. Maybe that's what it's been missing, but we shall see. Let's talk about the stadium. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this.
I was going to say again.
So Warrington have got the West Stand, North Never Each Red. Yeah, the West Stand, and then their overspill is effectively at the other end in the South Stand, but in blocks A, B, and C. I've seen some fans saying it's a bit out of order that our season ticket seats get eaten up by away fans, and I don't disagree with that. I believe the reasoning is that there's more reserved at the other end than at the ABC end, which means that's why they've not put them there. I believe they can't use the East Stand because that's been decommissioned apparently. So I'm informed, whatever that means. I think this, I have heard some reports that there was some damage under it at some point.
Somebody's lost the key then, that's what it
is. Yeah, I think that's probably it. The West Stand's not been used for 4 years. I think it was COVID, actually, is the only reason it's being used. I remember sitting in the West Stand, actually, for one of the COVID matches. So it'll be good, you know, and it'd be good to see the North Stand. I know there were a few fans were worried that Warrington fans would be in the North Stand, but the North Stand will be exclusive for Widnes fans, and hopefully it'll be as full as it's been for a long time. I know Alan Coleman, when I've had a few chats with him, he was hoping to get 6,000. I was a little less ambitious than Alan Coleman. I must admit, I was thinking around 4.5. I think 4 or 5 is probably where it's going to end up. But I suppose you don't know how many people are going to turn up on the day. You just hope that it's a good experience, because ultimately it's the biggest game that Widnes have played under the current the current ownership or the current, I know there's been a few changes in shareholders and whatever, but it's the biggest game Widnes have played since the club was in administration, basically.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, James, I've got hopes for over 5,000, to be honest, because I think a lot of people that are going to be coming the game, you know, probably don't have season tickets and they're coming out because it is Warrington and it's our first chance to maybe, you know, get some of them people back and keep them. I think what you find with people who have kind of stayed away for a couple of years, obviously, you know, they get out of sync with things, and, you know, maybe even some of the social media that's been, you know, popping up about tickets, get your tickets, prior to the day in an ideal world. You know, they're not necessarily reading that. I do see quite a few leaving it last minute and deciding to go. So I'm going to be a little bit more optimistic than what you are and maybe say just over the maybe five and a half mark, hoping for that. And like I say, it'd be the main thing is, isn't it, seeing a full stadium. And so we've kind of forgot what that feels like, give or take a couple of games, haven't we? And, you know, it can be quite a, you know, I don't know what the word would be, but, you know, for some of them lower attending games, you know, you feel like the place is empty and quiet and stuff. So it'd be really nice to get that atmosphere back and, you know, a feel-good factor and hopefully, you know, some much-needed income for the club. And for me, the biggest concentration of the day, which if I was the club, I'd be looking at the biggest opportunity of the day is trying to reconnect with some of them fans who have kept away and try and get them to the next home game or a couple of games, you know, between now and the end of the season. I think that's, you know, if you can keep a couple of hundred of them, you know, that's definitely a win for the club.
Yeah, I think it was the Wakefield game, wasn't it, last season that was a great atmosphere because Wakefield brought quite a few and they were obviously in the north stand. I mean, it should be an opportunity for Widnes to try and reconnect with people, whether they've got the systems or the structure in place to do that at the moment. I'm not sure whether they have. But hopefully, like you say, that's sort of why you want it to be a competitive game, because what you don't want to happen is you bring, I mean, we'd just get 2,500 maybe every week on average. So maybe if there's 1,000 people who don't normally come, what you don't want them to come and see a big one-sided game. You want them to see a competitive game. But yeah, fingers crossed that it is the event and the occasion that we hope it will be. And you never know, might pull off an upset and get Bradford in the quarterfinals, and then you know, you're only a couple of wins from Wembley.
Well, that is certainly class definitely full, isn't it? But like you say, I know we're obviously a Widnes kind of podcast, but just as you touched on that, you know, the Bradford and obviously Salford game, what do you make of all the Salford shenanigans, mate?
I think there's a lot of stuff that goes on in rugby league that is ridiculous. And I think there's a lot of simple stuff that clubs do not do properly. I think there's a lot of stuff that clubs won't be told how to do properly. Salford's communication on whatever the situation is has been pretty appalling. The RFL's communication on it has been pretty appalling, to be honest. The bottom line is that the main people who, and take, you know, and I take the players away from this, obviously the players and their families are massively affected by any sort of financial problem or insecurity. But taking the players aside, the main people that anything like this affects is the fans. And they're the ones that are kept in the dark. You know, we've seen it with Widnes, to be fair. And, you know, and Widnes aren't the only club who I don't think are particularly great at communicating with their fans. But I just think so many clubs are almost paranoid or run. They almost run as if they're scared of telling people the truth or scared of being transparent. I don't know why they like that, because, you know, fans understand if you're open and honest with them. The problem, it's interesting because Salford have been on that journey where they have been open and honest in the past, and it's actually galvanised them. I have to say, when I saw the Salford takeover thing, I was very suspicious. I mean, why is a Swiss investment banker going to pay off a load of debts at Salford? And, you know, it remains to be seen whether it actually does come to fruition. I think what gets me is that you also get big announcements about these takeovers, and there's always a CEO or a chief exec who, you know, he always wants to put his name to it as, I'm going to be the saviour. But then straight away there's been a problem. Have you heard anything of the CEO or the person who was meant to be guiding the ship? Well, no, you haven't. So I think Salford, I think Bradford could beat Salford, to be perfectly honest. I would actually not be, I would not be surprised whatsoever if Bradford beat Salford.
I'll be honest, mate. I've got my money on Bradford. I mean, it reads an absolute mess. It really does. And you know, you're talking week to week now. A side who's meant to be operating at the top level, and the RFL are of, you know, kind of letting it go by where the, you know, the expenditure cap, they're being reduced, and you know, players are allowed to play, then they're not, then solve for the, you know, throwing the baby out the bathwater. It's just an absolute mess. And I just, the one person I feel sorry for the fans, but I also feel sorry for Paul Rowley, because let's have it right, mate. How the hell are you meant to coach in that mess?
The thing is with it, with that Salford one, is that whatever happened with that St. Helens game, the RFL should have come out and explained what the situation was. Whether it was Salford throwing the toys out the pram, the RFL should have clarified. But then the RFL have basically, we don't know what exactly has happened, but then it feels like they've relaxed the restrictions for them to play Castleford last week, and then now they're back in the stick again. Obviously, Matt Shorey, we've had on the podcast before, he gets lots of personal abuse because of his coverage of Salford. And actually, without someone like Matt Shore's coverage of it, fans would be even more in the dark than
I totally agree, mate. I'm glad you said that. I totally agree.
And that's what, and obviously the Salford fans have been blindly supportive of what's going on, but they don't know what's going on. And I get that fans are supportive of their, you know, are always naturally defensive about their clubs, but I don't see what clubs think they have to gain by not being open and transparent and honest. I just don't see what they think they're going to stand to gain. Why not communicate with the people that effectively without you wouldn't exist? You know, I always think it about clubs that do season ticket deals. I know some clubs do like £100 season tickets. Well, I always feel like it's such a backwards approach, because they're the people who are more likely to give you more money.
Yeah.
You put £100 season tickets on, but then you make it 25 quid for people to come in.
Yeah.
They've got it all wrong, because them season ticket holders, they'll pay the 250 or 300 quid or whatever it is, because they're your diehard fans that are bought into it. The fans, but for them to become diehard fans, for someone to become a diehard fan, they've got to come to a match for the first time. But if for the first time they come to a match, it's 25 quid, that might be the barrier for them coming the first time. And the amount of times I see that, it baffles me within the game. And, you know, you touch on Bradford as well. We've also got this situation now with the RFL where Nigel Wood's back in as interim chairman. And, I, you know, whatever, he got a massive payoff, £300,000 or £400,000, when he resigned a few years ago. Super League have split from the RFL, appointed their own man. They've got back into bed with the RFL. They've then got IMG in. The amount of money that's coming out of the game to executives, so, you know, there's a chairman who's working 2 days a week or whatever, the amount of expenses that gets paid on these boards, committees, directors, IMG get 450 grand a year. It's like rugby league's not got any money in it, yet somehow all of this strategic stuff, none of which is ever really spitting out anything of any relevance, is taking out so much money. Going back to the Salford thing, we saw it last season where London Broncos effectively had a season written off. Hull wrote off the season. They get rid of promotion and relegation because they say that it stops teams going bust and it makes things better for clubs. It doesn't work because, you know, London basically finished bottom last year and then have had financial problems. Salford are in the midst of financial problems at the moment. But if you look at Widnes have got no hope whatsoever of attracting investment, or because they've got no control over whether they would be in Super League. And I know you can say, oh, well, they can get to the 15 points, but I don't think there's any evidence to suggest that if you got to 12, more than 12 teams, you got a grade A, that they would accept another team going in. So it's great for Derek Beaumont because he's on the right side of the fence now. But if Widnes's very own Derek Beaumont came along, I just don't see why anyone would put the money in, because it's completely out of your... There's no pathway, you know. Like I say, if you could get promoted, you could take charge, sink in £1 million, recruit a super team like Lee did and get promoted.
Yeah.
You can't do that now. And I get that it's about investing in the infrastructure, but if you look at all the main players in Super League now, none of them are sustainable. They're all underpinned by, and to be fair, it's not a rugby league thing. All sports are the same. They're all underpinned by a rich man. The problem is, at the moment, there's only 12 clubs, realistically, that are of interest to a rich man. Wakefield, they got a rich man on board because they were virtually guaranteed by the IMG rankings to get in. If that had been a different situation, I don't think the Wakefield owner goes in there. If they were in a position like, say, Featherstone, where it was like, oh, we're going to be 15th, 16th, we're not going to be in, I don't think he invests that money. And I think that's where the game's at, unfortunately.
Always seems to be, doesn't it? Like, it's a really difficult one. Me personally, right, about league structures, I personally like the Super 8s. I thought it offered a bit of a uniqueness to the sport. It gave an opportunity for sides playing in the Championship to get, you know, bigger crowds against Super League clubs. And also you've seen upsets, and we come down for it. Obviously, you know, what was going on behind the scenes was a separate matter, of course. But, you know, we got relegated through that system, you know, so it was a competitive system. I remember London beating Salford at Salford. Obviously, we got beat a few times in it. So for me, that's the way I'd go. But then you're going back, aren't you, again? Like, how many times do we have to change it? I mean, like, it's like trying to jump off a roundabout, innit?
Yeah. I wasn't a massive fan of the Super 8s, but in hindsight, I do get where you're going with it. I think the issue I had, I think, with the Super 8s was when you're in Super League, you've got nothing to gain but everything to lose. But then I suppose that's sport, isn't it?
And as, like, it kind of, another reason why I liked it as well is, like, you know, if you're in that like mid to bottom Super League, say you're like third or fourth, you know, and you got no meaningful games and you're not going to finish much higher than where you are, it kind of adds a bit more, you know, jeopardy and kind of less meaningful games, if that makes sense.
I think the only one downside I thought with the Super 8s was I didn't like how You had the main portion of the season, didn't you, which was all organised and structured. But obviously, them last seven games, you don't know when or where they are until, like, yeah, the week before. And that's my only other negative of that format. I mean, like, you can create a 2-week gap, can't you? Because if you've got the Challenge Cup or whatever, you can factor that in. But that was also the only other.
It's the logistics of the French team as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, well, Widnes had Toronto, didn't they, in one of them? Like you say, whatever system it is, you just got to stick to it. And I think the problem's been is that you just keep chopping and chopping and changing it. It turns people off. You know, like I say, witness prime example, there'll be hundreds of people, if not thousands of people, that have been turned off by, as witness fans, by various structure changes that have impacted on witness. And I don't think it's necessarily people being put out that they're not in Super League. I think it's more the fact that when you're not in Super League, that if there's absolutely no hope of getting in there, it's almost like, well, why bother?
Yeah.
And I think there's too much of that now where, you know, you had them years pre-Super League, that last time where it was the franchise system, you couldn't get in. There's, like you say, there's no presence for the Championship, really. There's no pride in being a good Championship club. That's something that maybe needs to change. But, I think whatever problems that you perceive Widnes to have, I think it's probably a consequence. Some of them are almost certainly a consequence of the overall problem of rugby league.
Yeah, and look, we're not on our own, are we? There's obviously a hell of a lot more sides who are kind of suffering through, you know, the same thing of being able to get to the next level. I mean, like the, you know, the problems that you've just been going on about there about getting to that next step and IMG points, you know, you look at the you know, the ambitious owners at Oldham, how long is it going to take for them to get fed up potentially, you know, and again, that's another risk you've got is, you know, sides that are progressing, you know, how much are they going to be allowed to progress? I'm not sure.
There's only so much you can do quickly with money. Like you can obviously recruit a superstar team because of the salary, because of the effectively the elastic salary cap in the Championship, because it's so big. You can recruit a team to win the Championship overnight, and that's sort of what Oldham. Well, they're probably a mid, you know, probably a playoff team, but they could recruit a team to win the Championship overnight. But how are they going to get the average? You know, and winning games gets the average crowd up, but there's not. It's almost out of the club's hands to a point, getting things like the crowd up, the revenue up, the sponsorship in, stuff like that. You can't make that happen any quicker than it happens. You know, unless you're going to go around and pay people 100 quid to come to the game, which, you know, you could do. But do you know what I mean? Like I think you can only get to so many points on the IMG scale.
Yeah,
in a short period of time. And like I say, the problem is if it's going to take 10 years for, and I'm not saying it would, but let's say it's going to take 10 years for Oldham to get to 15 points, is the money man there or...
Well, I guarantee if it did, the fans who they're trying to attract, they'll have lost interest halfway through at least.
Well, and that's the problem you've got, whereas, you know, look at Lee, like Lee have sort of... They've come up and down a few times, but this time has been far. They've been far. They've got far more established this time than they've done on any of the previous occasions. And Beaumont was putting money in the last time they went in. They got relegated, but this time when they've come in, they've just gone absolutely through the ceiling. You know, the crowds are good. The fan experience is good. They won a Challenge Cup. And that's going back to that Oldham thing. If Oldham went up one year and came straight back down, that might just budge their level up slightly. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It might, yeah, they might come back down, but it might just bump them up so that if they then come down and then go up again next time, they do what Lee have done. Hull KR, you could argue Hull KR have been the same. When Hull KR went up the year, they beat Widnes in the grand final. That was the first time they'd been in it. They had a core of a team. They did pretty well. They finished fourth, I think, was the highest they got to. But it's only since they got relegated and then went back up that they've then kicked on and got even better. You know, you could make the point for Wakefield. Wakefield have been in the Super League for however many years, 25 years. They eventually got relegated. And actually, they're in a much better place now than they probably ever have been.
And do you know what? That's probably a lost part of sport, mate, where... Really, that's part and parcel of it. You know, coming down and failing, that's a big area of where you learn. You know, where where you need to get better, where you need to spend your money, you know, like Derek, going back to that example, I think the difference this time with them going back up and massively succeeding, forgetting the rebranding, but it's the people he's invested in off the field, his staff, you know, it's not just a team on the pitch, you know, and that's, you know, when he first did it, went up and come back down, you know, he probably never really even thought of that. You know, of course he's, you know, he's a successful businessman, far more smarter than me, but I bet he didn't, you know, I bet there's things he's learned along the way where he thought, I need this, I need that, which has took him, you know, to where they are today. And like you say, you know, if there's a closed shop, you know, and you can get lazy for a couple of years, you're not necessarily going to be forced into learning by your mistakes and ultimately, you know, improving the club, not just on the field, but off the field as well.
Well, you look at Lee, like Derek Beaumont's involved in this situation where the RFL chairman's resigned, etc. He's been one of the main drivers of it. I am sure that has come about because Derek Beaumont's been on both sides of the fence. He's been outside of Super League looking in, he's been inside Super League looking out. And I'm sure that he's probably spent years inside the tent and then he's come out of it and then thought, right, next time I'm inside the tent, this is what I'm going to look to try and do. Everyone's got to look after themselves. But yeah, it's just frustrating. I think a lot of stuff gets talked about players with the relegation thing. Oh, well, it's people's livelihoods, etc. But with all due respect to the players, the player pool is that small that if you play for a relegated team and you're going to do well not to get another full-time deal somewhere anyway, because there's not a massive production line of players sat waiting there. And that's the other thing that gets me is like, the only sound excuse I hear people say about relegation is, oh, well, it doesn't allow clubs to plan for the future. It doesn't, you know, and it risks players' livelihoods. They're the one or two arguments I hear against it. And I just think when I weigh that up against how the current system basically locks out everyone who isn't in Super League. Everyone outside of Super League is pretty much anonymous at the moment. I just think, how can this way be better?
Yeah, I agree. And look, you know, like players like Lewis Roberts, for example, Ryan Hampshire's another one. With or without promotion and relegation, they're players who've really, you know, they've had to wait for a deal, and that's not because they've been relegated and all of a sudden got no contract. And I'm pretty sure that them players wanted to be signed up and be at a club. Look, unfortunately, like you say, like I don't want to sound, you know, too, you know, brutal on players, I suppose, and you know, thoughtless and stuff like that, but. You know, that's where the RFL need to come in as well, isn't it? And, you know, come up with something, you know, that, you know, makes players feel safe in a scenario where there's promotion and relegation. You know, every other sport and governing body does it. You know what I mean? I don't see, you know, well, any other sports really on social media where a side gets relegated and there's, you know, players and fans putting tweets up saying, you know, I've got no tea to put on the table now, my money's gone. So again, you got to look at yourselves as a sport, look at the governing body and go, right, well, we need to sort this, do you know what I mean, to make it, you know, sustainable.
Yeah.
It's rugby league again, isn't it? You know,
people lose jobs for all sorts of reasons in all walks of life. That's the bottom line. You can get made redundant in any job. And yeah, I just think using that as a reason is fairly loose. Anyway, we digress. Widnes against Warrington, Saturday night, 5:00. It's not on TV. I see loads of people asking. It's not on TV. It is on the radio, though. BBC Radio Merseyside, if you want to listen to me, I'm on commentary, I think, this weekend. And Mike will be causing trouble in the North Stand, probably. Is that where you're going, Mike?
Yeah, I'm in the North Stand, hopefully as central as possible usually. might be pushed there, really, to one side or the other this week due to the flock of people, which doesn't usually happen.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks for joining us, everyone. We hope to have a guest on in next week's, but we'll it might be next week, it might be the week after, but wherever you
people in suspense, eh?
Yeah, I mean, don't get too excited with all the guests. Yeah, enjoy the cup match, behave yourself, and we'll see you next week.